happening right now, Prime Minister Mark Carney is announcing an investment of $2 billion for 190 armored combat support vehicles. Today in London, Ontario, announcing a new strategic partnership with General Dynamics Land Systems Canada that will allow them to build and deliver 190 additional armored combat support vehicles, expanding Canada's fleet from 360 to 550 vehicles. This, of course, all a part of the Carney government's push to reach NATO's 2% defense spending target. That spending target is going up, I will say, and we're going to get to that in a second, but a lot happening in geopolitics these days.
China's a good friend of Solomon Islands, but this is not something a friend does. This is not not good in our region.
We are living in a region that is proudly nuclear-free and has a history here. But also, we don't want to see increasing militarization in our region.
The government is concerned about the current missile launch from the viewpoint of the security of Japan and the region.
The theaters are getting more and more intertwined, connected. What happens in the Pacific is relevant to what is happening in the transatlantic.
Well, that's widespread outrage in recent days after China's test launch of a nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missile. Those clips courtesy of ABC News in Australia, including the voices of the prime ministers of Solomon Islands and New Zealand, the chief cabinet secretary of Japan, and the NATO secretary general. We have witnessed a remarkable few weeks in geopolitics, a remarkable few years, really. I think my next guest would agree. On the same day, July 6th, that China test-fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile into the Pacific, their first time doing that ever, Canada announced the largest defense procurement in our history, up to 12 new submarines. Meanwhile, the Iran ceasefire has collapsed, Ukraine grinds on, and NATO just wrapped a summit where allies agreed to spend 5% of GDP on defense by 2035. George Takash is a Canadian lawyer and the author of some very timely books, Cold War 2.0, Artificial Intelligence in the New Battle Between China, Russia, and America, and more recently, Inspired by Taiwan, Why Supporting Taiwan Matters for Global Democracy. George, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Tamara. Great to be here.
All right. Let's start with July 6th, George. China fires a submarine-launched nuclear-capable missile 7,000 kilometers across the Pacific. And on the same day, Canada announces it's buying up to 12 submarines from Germany. Coincidence or is the world telling us something, George?
Well, the missile launch by China is very interesting because they have done this before. All the big powers who have ballistic missiles, of course, test those missiles to make sure they work. But it's interesting, the previous test that they did was their land-based missile, and they fired it from China, over China, it landed in China, and in the scheme of things, it wasn't a big deal. Now, they could have launched this submarine one. So this was a test to see if they could do the same thing, launch a ballistic missile from a submarine. So I get it. They have to test. But they could have done the test just off the coast of China and then have the missile fly over China, land in China, you know, usual routine. Instead, they were very aggressive and very provocative. And your clip with the Solomon Islands leader and so on and the Australian leader are absolutely justified. And there's a protocol when you do these submarine tests, there's a protocol to follow. And again, China ignored that. So yes, the world is getting more dangerous because of China, because of Russia in particular. And to your point about Canada's coincidental announcement of the submarine purchase, I don't think it was made that day because of the Chinese test, but it was absolutely made because of the general armament race that China, you know, it's on track to really ramp up its navy, its military generally. And so good on Carney to finally realize that, yeah, Canada has to do its part. And let me just finish. It gives me no pleasure that Canada is going to spend all this money, because with maintenance and so on, it'll be $100 billion over the life of the deal. It gives me no pleasure, because that's money not spent on education and health care and pensions and so on, but it's kind of not our fault, right? Mm-hmm. It's these other countries that are driving us to take care of our own national security.
I want to dig into the subs more in a minute, but if we could stick with the China test launch for just one more moment. China gave the U.S. and Japan a few hours notice, Australia about a day. The missile landed, as you said, in the South Pacific nuclear free zone, not over China, but New Zealand called it unwelcome and unwelcome and concerning. What was, do you think, China saying with this missile test?
So just to be clear, and again, let's be reasonable, it was fired from a nuclear-powered submarine, and the missile itself could carry a nuclear weapon, but for the test, it did not have, obviously, a nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm. So strictly speaking, it's not the worst that could have happened. But the message to your narrow question is China is telling the world that that part of the Pacific, just like the South China Sea and just like Taiwan, China is saying very clearly, this is our territory, and America and Europe and Canada, you stay out of it. And the other message, you know, the correlated message to Australia, New Zealand and Japan and South Korea and Taiwan and the Philippines is there's a new boss in this region and we're the boss. And if you're seeing what actually is going on in the Strait of Hormuz in the Iran situation, mm-hmm. Part of it comes down to money. So, for instance, the Taiwan Strait, which is the 160-kilometer waterway between China and Taiwan, which carries about 50% of the world's maritime cargo, if Iran and the U.S. get their way of starting to charge for ships passing through the Strait of Hormuz, well, guess what? China's going to start charging for that traffic going through the Taiwan Strait. So that means that what, you know, Canadian consumers in Regina and Saskatoon, what they pay for anything that comes out of the Pacific countries and Asia and so on, the prices are going to go up because there's a new sheriff in town, and in this case, China wants to be that sheriff for that region.
If you're just joining us, I'm Tamara Cherry in for Evan Bray, and I'm speaking with George Takash, lawyer, author, geopolitics extraordinaire. George, you just mentioned if Iran and the U.S. get their way about charging to go through the strait, I mean, U.S. President Donald Trump said earlier this week that he would impose a 20% fee for anything going through the Strait of Hormuz, but then he flip-flopped on that. And so he appears to have not gotten his way. Does that give you hope for, does that in turn weaken the powers of China to do the same?
Well, it's interesting. Just on the narrow point about Trump flip-flopping, I'm actually surprised the only flip-flop once on that. He is very mercurial. He's unpredictable. Just as an aside, I do not envy Mark Carney's job in trying to negotiate a deal with this man. It's just really, really hard. So to draw a lesson from that narrow flip-flop, I think is premature. The bigger lesson, frankly, tomorrow, from the Iran war, this silly war that Trump started and for no good reason, and now he's frankly in a quagmire, is he is expending literally hundreds and hundreds of missiles, particularly the Tomahawk missile and the Patriot missile, and these are in short supply. And they're starting to siphon off those weapons from Asia, sending them into the Middle East. So is China happy about Trump being stuck in the mud in Iran? They are delighted. And, you know, the first rule when you see someone digging a hole for themselves is you just let them keep digging a hole. So, yeah, no, China comes out net positive on the Iran war.
Okay, so I want to keep then with the Middle East and also bring in Eastern Europe into this, George. One of my guests earlier this week pointed out that what we see happening in Iran is inextricably linked to what we see in Russia, no doubt referring to the Iranian drone supply chain to Russia. The U.S.-Iran ceasefire just collapsed. The oil price volatility that comes from what is happening in the Strait of Hormuz will also affect Russia's oil revenues and really, I mean, the economic stamina of both sides in Ukraine. And finally, something else we've all heard about this week, a significant hawk on Iran and Russia's war in Ukraine. U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham died suddenly this past weekend. How do you see all of these events converging and potentially impacting each other?
Well, I don't want to say that I saw this all coming, but I did, and that was why I wrote...
Lindsey Graham's death? Should we be asking some more questions about that?
Okay, that one I'll grant you. 71 years old, you know, he left us way too soon. Mm-hmm. But all the other trends that you've been mentioning, I saw it very clearly. And in fact, at the end of my Cold War 2.0 book, which came out in early 2024, I said, you know, as dangerous as Russia is, as dangerous as China is, the most dangerous event on the horizon would be a return to power of Donald J. Trump. And that has happened, obviously, because he could have solved and settled the war in Ukraine, maybe not in 24 hours, but in 3-4 months. Instead, he spent most of 2025 cozying up to Vladimir Putin. So Vladimir Putin feels, oh, well, you know, no reason for me to hurry up and you know, resolve this conflict. And then more recently, he starts the war. Trump starts the war in Iran and pokes the bear. And now he's in a worse position than he was previously. The only thing that Trump has done smart about Iran is not send thousands and thousands of young American soldiers to their deaths by sending in ground troops. He's got them there. He could have, and my sources tell me he was dissuaded at the last minute. That would have been an absolute disaster. But he's still at it with, you know, his Air Force and his Navy. And, you know, Iran is now, feeling like, hey, we've got some cards to play. Mm-hmm. And so he's in a real... Now, the good news, back to Ukraine, is that the technology war, at least for the time being, is somewhat being won by Ukraine. And they've managed to hold back Russia from further gains on the ground by using primarily drones, but also missiles, and now the deep strikes into Russia. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually somewhat hopeful that in the next, you know, 6-7 months, Putin will finally come to his senses and say, look, this is really, really hard to take on Ukraine. Maybe I should do a peace deal.
Wow. Who could have imagined we'd be saying that when those tanks were rolling in to Ukraine and everybody was saying, I give them 2 or 3 days and Ukraine is going to be part of Russia. Okay, you've given us a great global look of what's going on in the world. I want to go to a quick break. And afterwards, we're going to bring it back to Canada and Saskatchewan in particular to talk more about what's happening here and why this and how this impacts us all. George Takash is my guest. And I'm Tamara Cherry in for Evan Bray. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show. No shortage of warfare to discuss on the show. These days, we headed into the break with a pretty broad conversation about all sorts of geopolitical things going on. China test launching into the Pacific Ocean, the Iran-US ceasefire collapsing, the Ukraine war dragging on, but perhaps with some hope on the horizon. And we're having this discussion, of course, with geopolitics extraordinaire George Takash, who spent his very long and storied career as a lawyer and is now writing a number of very timely and fascinating books about all of these issues. Cold War 2.0 is one of them we mentioned just before the break. He also more recently wrote Inspired by Taiwan, Why Supporting Taiwan Matters for Global Democracy. And George, I wonder if we can now zoom in to Canada, but also to Saskatchewan. You know, like we had this announcement earlier this month about all of these subs that Canada is going to be buying. We also have breaking news just over this last hour of Canada buying nearly $2 billion in armored vehicles from a U.S. defense contractor. I mean, speak directly to our landlocked listeners here in Saskatchewan. Why does this matter to us here?
Yeah, so just drilling down to Saskatchewan specifically, you know, whether it's natural resources under the ground and some of the, you know, massive fertilizer deposits and nutrient and so on, or whether it's canola, the stuff grown on top, or some of the oil and gas on the western side of Saskatchewan. You know, we are always looking for foreign markets for those products, and we've done very well when we can get those markets, or, you know, buying our products. But in today's world, it's just a more muscular place, sadly, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And so to break into markets increasingly, you have to show some credibility. You have to show some street cred, as it were. And in the last 20, 25, 30 years, we've let our military literally atrophy away, and nobody was taking us seriously over the last 5 or 6 years. And so now with Carney, you know, starting to spend and starting to rebuild the military, that will absolutely help us in negotiations on whether it's canola sales. If you notice, you know, Carney went to China and got canola sales kind of going again, and that's very good. But I got to tell you, one of the things we did about 2 months ago is we sent a Canadian warship through the Taiwan Strait, the one I mentioned before the break. And, you know, China did not go crazy on us because they're starting to respect us again. So I don't want us to be a warmonger by any stretch, but it's a little bit like the old hockey analogy. And I'll just end on this. So I'm a long-suffering Leafs fan, and, you know, when we don't make the playoffs or we're out after, you know, the first series, we often say in Toronto, oh, we don't have enough grit on our team. We don't have the guys who are willing to grind and fight for the puck and so on. And in geopolitical terms, I hope I'm not stretching the analogy, but that's what rearming your military means, is that people will take you seriously. And we're going to go further in the Stanley Cup of geopolitics.
We no longer have the U.S. goon to send on the ice to. We need our own goons, and that's coming in the forms of subs. That is so fascinating, George, the idea of all of this defense spending, not just about defense. That's how I've been looking at it. But as a proactive economic move to just give us some of that street credit, as you said. George Takash, I encourage our listeners to look up all of your books. And I'm sure we'll have you back again. Always fascinating conversations. I appreciate your time, George. Have a good one.
Sounds good. Thanks. Cheers.
Thank you. All right. On the other side of the break, we are talking help for seniors and long-term care problems in this province. You're listening to 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.